The most action-packed content from the top mobile experts. This is the App Masters Podcast with Steve P. Young.
The world's best subscription apps use RevenueCat to power in-app purchases, manage customer data, and grow revenue on iOS, Android, and the web. With RevenueCat, I can easily see my most important metrics. What are those? That's install the trial the paid, and LTV. And now they have a new paywall feature that's going to make it easy for you to build high converting paywalls and, more importantly, A/B tests without needing a new build. Learn more at RevenueCat.com. That, once again, is RevenueCat.com. Notix is an audience re-engagement service based on web and in-app push notifications that work for both desktop and mobile devices. With Notix, website, app owners, and marketers can share their content and interact with their audiences in a highly engaging channel, while still having the opportunity to monetize both mobile and web subscribers. Learn more by visiting notix.co. That is notix.co. What is up, App Nation? It is Steve P. Young. I'm back after taking Thanksgiving off last week here in the States. We are back like every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, and we're going to talk about how to really map out your customer journey. And it's not just for big companies, but if you're just starting out, why you should start early, mapping out your customer journeys, sending the right push notifications to help you maximize your sales and retention. Our guest is Paul. He previously co-founded and was the chief data officer of PaySense, a consumer fintech mobile app in India that was acquired for $185 million in 2019. And we're going to talk all about how you use AI to maximize your engagement, thereby helping your revenues. So let's bring Paul in. Paul, welcome to the show.
Steve, awesome to be here.
All right. Well, we got your website. It is called amp.com. Go check them out right here. For those, I know we talked about this. Maybe it's good to start off here, Paul, but like, first, I guess, what are user journeys? And then you taught me a new word about clickstream. So maybe we can jump into that before we go into some of the more deeper details.
Yeah. So AMP is a form of infrastructure that myself and two machine learning scientists that I've worked with extensively over the course of my career, and it represents this key gap that we saw in the ability for this amazing device, right? That's not that old. App Store was launched in 2008. Yeah. So just a few years over 10 years old, right? But it, in terms of its evolution of the impact it's had on human life around the world, is incredible. I'm here in Singapore and in this region, Southeast Asia, we leapfrogged the desktop and have went straight to the phone. And that is the core compute, is the thing that people use to structure and to navigate life. And so, but the problem is that the way we build those applications has to evolve. And so AMP is a kind of infrastructure that lets us do that. We can get into the details of that, but it, the application that we're used for specifically is around messaging and messaging around the user journey, around the customer journey. And you mentioned Clickstream. If you scroll up, we tried to visualize it on our website. The Clickstream is really just the fact that as a person navigates through an app, as they use it, everything that they're doing, in order for the program to work, in order for it to respond to that user's actions, it's generating what is called a click stream. It's just a sort of a stream of clicks, or really in a phone, it's not just clicks, it's swipes and nudges and everything else. But those are represented behind the scenes as just this log of a user ID and of a timestamp, the time that happened, and then the event or the action that they took in that app. And that is just being generated very passively in the background. And it's a really rich source of understanding what people are experiencing as they use your application. And that's where our infrastructure starts. It begins to use that, but it doesn't stop there, I think. That's an important key thing we'll talk about today as well.
And I was going through, James had a great, and you guys can check out AMP's blog post right here. James was at AGS event, and I think at Barcelona, and he was talking about how he's using AI and some of the technologies that you guys do. So I definitely recommend checking that out. It's on the blog right here, using AI to optimize user engagement through the user journey, or optimize engagement through the user journey. But Paul, like, you know, when I think of this stuff, I'm like, is it always just for the big companies out there, or can the small guys who are just getting going, can they use this type of technology?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Small guys, small apps, small businesses, just single developers can use it. And we hope that they will. And it should change the way we build applications. So most of my career I actually spent on the internals of an app, kind of building recommender systems, pricing models, things like that, always inside it. And when we started AMP, it was really to serve and help the part that happens outside. But we did that because we want the application to be able to support every single user. And to do that, it needs to learn that user. It needs to understand that person in the context that they're in. And that happens very much from day one, and should happen from day one as you build the app as well. In fact, you asked this, one of the key questions people think about when they're a new app, when they're just getting started, and they're like, oh, this is something down the road, this is something you use later on. And they ask kind of like this key question of how much data do you need? And how do you get data when the app is new? And I think that's one of the most pernicious myths of data science and AI, is that it's about existing data and that you have to have very large data. And of course, very large data is great and you can learn lots of things from it. But actually the key part of data science, the science part, is that you have to, is the generation of data, is the creation of data. Actually, I think maybe you can pull up, I did some slides. So I always find it really interesting to look at how people in the world respond to apps. So I started running a few years ago as a way to help me be a better founder, a better business builder. There's a lot of emotions that go into building a business, and running helps me with those, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. I use a lot of different running apps. And I really, but any kind of app in the world, you can just like go onto X or Twitter or anywhere else. And if you just look at the name of the app and you type in something like notification or message or something, you'll get this whole stream of people talking about that app and of how they engage with it. Duolingo in education space is a great one. Poshmark in the commerce space has a lot of responses because they're pretty creative. But you can see here, here's a few that are about Strava and Nike Run Club. And what you can sort of see is that, people really have very specific preferences about how they want an app to engage with them, about how they want to be. And take the running as an example, right? Like, so I mentioned I run not really for the physical benefits, more for the mental and emotional benefits, right? That's very specific. Somebody else who runs to lose weight is thinking differently, all right? If you're running for someone like me, what are my alternatives? My alternatives are maybe to meditate or to just kind of relax and decompress watching something on Netflix, right? And so if a running app wants to keep me around, it has to be able to speak to the value proposition that I care about. If it sort of says, get in there and run your next mile, or, you know, make your 5K or something, I'm like, I don't care about making a 5K. But if it tells me run and feel better, right? Like, or run and, you know, relax your mind. That's incredible. So I think here's just three examples of people, you know, who have a very different, somebody who needs the app to treat them like a coach in high school, right? And get off the couch, right? Because you have a commitment to run. We're all coming up on the new year. You have a commitment to run. You want the app to, you know, have that relationship for you, versus another person who's like, that's aggressive, you know, back off. Like, don't yell at me. Yeah. you know, give me some encouragement, et cetera. So this is an example of that. But the problem is, any app will sort of say is, well, how do I know how you as a person want to be spoken to, how you as a user want to get engaged with?
Right.
And actually, the thing is, the trick is that your messages are themselves a way of creating data that lets you learn that thing. Because every time you speak to a user, you're doing the same thing that we do as humans when we interact with somebody. You know, having gotten to know each other over the last couple of weeks, right? How do we do that? We ask each other questions and we observe the response. We say things and we observe the response, right? That's what your notifications are. They're not just a re-engagement technique. They are a learning technique. They're a way that you can learn. But to do that, you have to be able to kind of make your messaging something that you can learn from. If you kind of, I think I shared some examples from another kind of app. So let's take Robinhood. So Robinhood is a stock trading app. I think everybody in the US should know what it is. I think most people elsewhere in the world knows what it is. It's been very successful, right? And here's an onboarding notification, all right? So this is for new users. And imagine you're not super successful, Robinhood. You're just getting started. You have an onboarding process. You have an application process, right? So this is a notification Robinhood sends a couple days, maybe a day after you've downloaded the app and you haven't finished the application process. But I'm gonna ask you, Steve, like, what's wrong with the notification?
It's a red head, but there's no reason why I should do this. It's like, okay, great, but all right, it's just sort of like a reminder. Hey, you forgot to do something. Like, okay, cool, but I'll get to it later. There's no benefit to why I should finish this up.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly it. I mean, there's lots of different problems you could come up with. I often hear people say stuff about length, or it doesn't have emojis or tone, or they ask questions about when it was sent. All those things are totally right, whether you should send it the next day or whether you should send it, wait till Saturday. But I think the key thing for me, if you go to the next slide, is that it has no why. It's entirely from the perspective of Robinhood. Robinhood wants you to finish an application. Right. But as a person, like, I don't want to finish an application. There's one more job to do in a very busy life that I have, you know, as a parent and somebody working and all these other things, right? I have no time for your nonsense applications. I don't want that. But here's the second problem to the point we're talking about, which is if someone responds or doesn't respond to this app, this message, sorry, what do I learn? Well, I learned that they finished their application, but that's it, mm-hmm. right? But what is that why? So if you go on, we can look at some examples. So what would be examples, right? All right, so here's a different kind of message we could send. And what does it speak to first? It speaks to the point. Now, here's something I can get behind. Unlocking my investment potential, taking the first step towards financial freedom. Heck yeah. Like, so say I heard about Robinhood at work, people around the water cooler talking about how they're spending their money and how they're investing their money and benefiting from it. And I'm like, wow, man, you know what? I'm not doing anything with my money. I need to. So I'm like, I'm going to check this app out. So I download the app, but I go home and I'm super busy and I just don't have time today. So I push it off, right? But tapping back into me and reminding me why I want to do it in the first place, that's huge, right? And if you respond to that, I know that. Now, here's the key thing is that that's fine. But let's say you're maybe 25, 27, and you know you should be thinking about the future, but sorry, you're not, right? Like, let's be fair. Not everybody's thinking about the future. We got a lot on our plate today. There's other messages, right? This speaks to somebody, but not another person. So let's look at another example, right? Here we go. Maybe I'm 25, 27. I'm not thinking about the future, but I'm on Discord. I'm on Twitter, right? And I want to be part of a community. People are trading and that's exciting. And there's, like, you know, stonks and memes and all these things, right? Like, this motivates me. Yes, I want to be part of that community. I'm ready, right? Imagine so many more, right? That's the key point, is that there's so many more possible ways of speaking to our people, to our users. Let's say it's super hot and you're worried about climate change and you believe in that we need to change and we're headed in a poor direction, right? But as a regular person, you don't have a lot of money. What can you do? You still have to support your family, everything, right? But if you got a few $1,000 in the account and now you can use Robinhood to put together a portfolio of climate-friendly, green energy, renewable energy companies, all of a sudden that allows you to put your money where your mouth is, where your values are. That's inspiring, right? So you could imagine a message like that. So here's the key thing. You need two pieces of, this is all fine, but as somebody building an app, let's, you know, again, to speak to our key audience here is people building new apps. You probably don't have a lot of people on your team. You don't have a lot of time, right? You don't have a lot of money. The key thing is what I'm describing seems to take a lot of resources. And I'd say that's because of a failure of software. That's because of a failure of the tools that we've developed to build better apps, because it shouldn't be that way. And the first thing is, so the first, there's two things you need to be able to do this. You need one to be able to generate all the possible versions. Right? That's the key thing. It's like you need, and you know best who your possible users are, but you know there's a lot of them. There's not just one. And I see everybody's always like, focus on your key user, only your ICP, only one person. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. But the truth is, diversity is the reality of the world today, right? Like, we're all different. It doesn't matter if we're both the same age and gender, and we're still different. We still care about different things. There is no one. And so that's a nice simplicity, but it's just not real. What's real is diversity. And so we need software to support that diversity. And so what we need to be able to do is, one, generate all those versions. So that's great. Most people have probably used something like ChatGPT or Bard or something like that. So they've seen the potential of AI to be able to generate different versions. In fact, a great exercise is to take your app, go over to ChatGPT or whatever other LLM you use, and type in, you know, write me five different notifications instead of just one. Five, start with five, but you can actually get into the thousands. And that's what we do with AMP. But you see, you get all the different versions. So that's the one, first thing. You need more than just one blank template. Robinhood should have more than one template onboarding message. Okay. Now, the second problem is, how do I know who to send which message to? That's a data problem, but it's not a data problem. It's actually a science problem. What you need to do is be able to sort of send all of them, not all of them to every person, but all of them to a certain set of people. And so what AMP is doing, the infrastructure behind the scenes, is a form of AI called reinforcement learning. You can think about it. Almost everybody listening to this, I'm sure, has run at least an A-B test in their life, right? Think of this as just a highly parallelized A-B test. Just run as many possible A-B tests as possible. Now, remember, we had that clickstream data that we looked at on the website.
Yeah.
So what that does is tells us something about the user just by how they navigate through the app the first time. They open the app, they look at this, they click this, they click this, right? So those things, what AMP does is ingest those, and then we generate this very large space that represents every possible user. You take those events, and you can just think of it as a very large spreadsheet, and each of the rows is a user, and each of the columns is all the thing. Like, they clicked this on a Sunday at 4 p.m. as opposed to 11 a.m., right? And so we just explode it into this very large, high-dimensional space. And that allows us to create a distance metric between every user and every other user. So we can, based on their actions, push them into similar groups, and then take all those messages and randomly assign those over those different groups, and then observe the response, and then adjust. So here's the thing. You got an onboarding message. But if they do the onboarding, you need to send them a message about something else, or you need to send a follow-up onboarding message. So really in life, it's one message, but really it's the next message, and the next message, and the next message. Right. And so what AMP is doing behind the scenes is helping you manage that without having to use the typical CRM platform of setting up a very manual, like a sort of a user journey of this message and then this message. Instead, you can generate lots of different messages, thousands of different messages, even if you only have a few thousand users. And then every message that's sent to every user is tracked for that user, and then all the users who are similar, and then adjusted. And so when we send that first onboarding message, if we see somebody who's responding to financial opportunity, then when we send the next message about finishing another part of the onboarding step, we can again refer to financial opportunity. When we let them know that they've finished their onboarding, we can congratulate them and let them know that they're on their path to financial opportunity, right? We can sync these things together so there's a coherent narrative for that particular person, and it'll change over time. So that's the key thing, is you need to continue to adjust and learn. So there's a lot of, I mean, you can find a lot of stuff on our blog, but that's the point, is what we're doing is we're creating data. We're not just using past data, we're creating data by running these experiments. And that's what allows us to learn our users faster.
couldn't you use some of this motivational tactics or like learn through the onboarding? A lot of these apps, especially in the fitness space, they'll ask you a lot of questions. What are you here for? Are you here to lose weight, build muscle, and all that stuff? Couldn't you use that data to then inform some of the messaging?
Yes and no. You absolutely should try to learn about users in your app UI, UX flow, and your design, how you design the app, et cetera. And sometimes explicit questions are important. I come from a background in cognitive science. I was in academia. We used to use surveys and lab questions like that all the time. But actually, when I moved into data science, I remember, you know, oftentimes whenever data scientists would sort of say, I need to know this thing, I'd be like, no, that's your job's to learn that thing. And not to ask the customer to do that work for you. And that's the problem I have with these explicit surveys, is you're just putting more work on the customer's plate. They don't want to tell you explicit things. They don't want to tell you exact. They may not even know themselves, right? So you can do a little bit of that, but any app developer will know the more you ask questions, the more you're introducing friction in the flow, the higher drop-off rate you're going to have. And so I would recommend you be careful about what you force them to ask. Instead, you should learn by observation. And this is, I think, is really key. AMP is informed by my own experiences in life. And like, I've had the opportunity to work with some extremely wealthy, powerful people. When I used to work for the U.S. Department of Defense building data systems and was in Afghanistan for a few years and worked directly for the commanding general of ISAF. Super successful, obviously powerful person. And when I was doing my PhD, my advisor was an incredibly successful academic who was flown all over the world by enterprises and corporates to give talks. And in each of those cases, right, like what that person does is have behind them a fleet, a suite of a team of people who are supporting their decisions, so that they don't make a lot of small decisions over the course of the day. And they only focus on what matters to them. And that, unfortunately, doesn't, it allows you to flourish in life, but it doesn't really scale. Most people in the world don't have assistance behind them, right? And our users usually don't. But our technology can actually serve that purpose if it can learn about a person fast enough, then it can do that. And the way a really successful human assistant does it is by observing you. They don't ask you, what do you want? What do you like? What do you like? What do you like? They kind of give you some suggestions. They learn when their suggestions are not good, and they learn when their suggestions are good, and then they get better at that, right? And so that's what I think our mobile applications can do. They can be assistants in our lives, whether it's you're helping people meditate, or you're helping people learn, or you're helping people make their phone prettier. Whatever it is, that application can help if it can learn about the person. So that's what it really AMP is about, is making that software and infrastructure available to anybody who wants to build an application.
One thing I want to highlight with this particular thing is we just released a video about like clever ways to use push notifications. And we found that according to our data and so all the clients we've been working with, that having some motivational content. So even if you're especially in the mental health space, send push notifications to motivate your audience. There's an app that just sends you motivational quotes. And then, you know, and I want to break this down a little bit further because I love where you've kind of messaged here. I almost think it as like a subject line. This is the main thing to get people's attention because that's where my eye is drawn, right? Like the title. And I'm looking at my phone to try to see different types of push notifications. And then the next step is like, okay, I got your attention now. Here's sort of like why I want you to do this, or here's the call to action that you should be doing this. And so I really like the way you sort of design all this too.
You know, you have to be thinking about motivation. Yeah. We don't live in a world anymore where someone has high intent because, and why? It's because we live in a world of prosperity. recession aside, we live in a world of prosperity. Us as humans in 2023 have more ways to spend our time and attention than ever before, right? Like, so even if you have not a lot of money, you can play games on your phone, you can watch movies on your phone, you can do meditation, you can learn things, right? And so any of those things, and there's since 2017, there's been something like 2,500 meditation apps launched across the Play Store and the App Store. If you're going to launch a meditation app, don't let it depress you. There's room for more. There's 7-8 billion people in the world. 2,500 is not enough. That's fine. But
Adrian's got one right here. So
exactly. So the thing is, right, is that anybody who's using you has other ways of satisfying that need and want and value in their life. They could instead watch a show or, you know, watch a YouTube or watch anything else or do something else, right? So if you want them to do the thing that you're thinking will help them and that they'll find value, and you got to motivate it. You got to speak to their motivation. Otherwise, you know, they might have had a good idea and been like, yeah, I want to try that. And they download the app, but they'll never follow through. They won't have the consistency and use it because they're not motivated. And so, yeah, that is your job as a developer and an app builder, is to keep your people motivated.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm going to go to James, his talk here, and I'll make sure I link this up into.
Yeah, it's a great talk. Jim is awesome. Follow him on LinkedIn.
Yeah, he does a great job. We just connected, Paul, and I was like, hey, Jim, we, you know, I'm having Paul on Friday. And he's like, oh, cool. This is perfect. What he talked about in the video, and I want to kind of highlight here too, is sort of like one of the most effective campaigns are triggered campaigns.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, like, I guess you need a question or you ready to go?
No. So I think it's important to define these things, right? What is a trigger? What do we mean by a trigger? A trigger is really just a reference point to a user's action. So again, remember that click stream? It's thinking about the person doing something in the app and then responding to that thing, okay? And you can explicitly set those triggers and you can implicitly set those triggers. And if you explicitly set it, you're sort of saying, I'm going to create content that is directly related to the user doing that thing in the action in the app. And yeah, and being responsive to people's actions in the app is really important. So triggers are excellent to use, but we just need to make it easy for them to use, because otherwise I think anybody will be asking the question of, well, what trigger should I set? And where do I set it? And, right? Like, that's the work that you shouldn't have to do, that AI is much better positioned to do.
I was going to ask you this, like, is there a trigger that applies to almost all apps that you're like, hey, if they've done this, this is where you should trigger?
I think what you can do is kind of narrow it down to kind of like your industry. I wouldn't say it's a mobile-wide universal trigger. I'll give you one from any kind of transactional commerce app. I'll give you one that we discovered at one point that was really kind of cool. Any kind of app where you check out, right? One of the most common campaigns or journeys that people will set up is what's called an abandoned cart campaign, right? And that what that is like somebody adds something to the cart. So they say, add it to the cart. We all have used e-commerce, so everybody knows what that means. You add it to the cart and then you don't check out. You don't convert. You don't buy the thing. All right. So that's an opportunity. So the automation observes that thing, and then it sends a message and it says, hey, come back and, you know, maybe you'll give a discount or maybe you'll just remind them that it's there.
Right.
It's fine. It's standard. They work really well. They're great to have. There's another kind actually that's sort of adjacent to it that's really interesting, which is what we saw was that when people, you know, and it can be a cart or it can be a wish list. Let's take a wish list as a better example. Ooh, if your app has a wish list before a cart, right? Removing something from a wish list is actually really important. That's kind of counterintuitive because you're like, don't take it out, right? Like as a business, you're like, don't take that out of your wish list. Buy it, like put it into the cart and buy it, right? But actually, no. Taking it out is really good. And I'll ask, why do you think that is?
Huh? It shows, I don't know, maybe activity or that they bought it and then now they have it. And so maybe you can show other things that they have. That's my guess.
Well, maybe.
A lot. Paul, you can be like, no, wrong, Steve.
Yeah. Well, I think there are always multiple possibilities. I think there is no single truth. However, there's a different perspective here, which is, that wish lists are like, we all have wish lists. We have mental wish lists. We have app wish lists, right? And what do we do with those? There are ways for us to kind of think, I want this thing and think I want this thing and think I want this thing. The The thing is you don't actually want all those things. And even as a business, you don't actually want your person, your customer to want all those things. That's way too much, right? So the thing is if you don't care about that application, you'll throw a bunch of stuff in the wish list and then you get it, won't get it, whatever. But what happens when you have too many things on your wish list? All the value of all of them drops. That's simple economics. You have too much stuff, the value of it drops. So it gets cluttered. It gets full. You don't know. You can't keep in mind, I really want that thing, because you've got 100 things and you know you don't want 100 things, right? So if you don't care about the application, you'll throw a bunch of stuff in your wish list and you'll forget it and you'll leave it and the app will die or you'll actively uninstall it, right? But if you remove something from the wish list, why are you doing that? That doesn't help you check out. So what it's doing is helping you keep that space clean. It means you value the list itself because you're organizing it. You're curating, right? It's like your watch list. You take stuff out of your watch list on Netflix because that helps you keep it really the things you want to watch, right? So that's really cool because it's like, all right, so if somebody's removing from the wish list, that's an indicator that they value my app. They value the wish list in the app because they're curating it. And so that can be a trigger to kind of congratulate them or help them focus on the things that are left in the wish list after they've removed the other things. I think that's a pretty cool, because it was very counterintuitive to me. At first, I was like, wait a second, why is that something we would want to encourage?
I like it. One thing on the cart abandonment, we have this case study that I was like, Paul, you read my mind. I knew you were going there, like the Clever Ways cart abandonment. I'm going to screw up her name, but past guests of ours on the podcast, she's highlighting this case study where they did more notifications. So it was cart abandonment, and these were like digital, the app was called Zinio, and these were people who added their magazines to the cart, and there was a digital magazines, and they would send it 1 hour and then wait 2 days and send another reminder. They then switched over to send three reminders, 1 hour, 1 day, and then 1 week, and they saw a 13% increase in conversions. So yeah, I love that thing.
This is what I mean when I say software has failed us. If you go back one slide, back one slide. This one? See, the thing is like, all right, so you send it 1 hour after cart abandonment. Obviously, there's so many people that that's not relevant for. I just added to the cart. I didn't check out. I know I added to the cart. You reminded me. I don't need the reminder, right? Like, not some people do, but some people are like, why are you sending me a message an hour after? Like, for instance, I have a 4-year-old son and we recently needed to replace his bicycle helmet. And so, I was surfing around looking for different possible bicycle, buying a bicycle helmet for a 4-year-old is an important process. Like he has his preferences. We have our preferences. So I added some to the cart, right? But the problem was I needed to confer with my partner, my wife. Like we both had an opinion on it, right? And I couldn't do that on a Thursday. We were both super busy. We're both working early stage technology, right? Like, so I needed to wait till Saturday. Like now, if you don't remind me on Saturday, I might just stop into a Decathlon or a shop here in Singapore and buy it and pick it up, right? So I need to be reminded, but not an hour later, but some people do. So what you do is you end up do this. You just send, well, I'm going to send you all of them. And you could send it 2 weeks later, right? Or 4 days later, right? And you do that because you're trying to capture everybody. But actually, you don't need to. If the software itself was able to randomly assign different times and then observe those based on your app actions in the app, how much did you search for that product before you added to the cart? How long it had been in your cart? Was it in a wish list first? Were there other options? How fast have you bought things in the past in that app? All of those things is super useful information that an AI can handle in order to randomize different assignments. So when you use AMP, you don't set up these arbitrary rules 1 hour, 1 day. There is no best rule for everybody. Again, diversity. We're different. We have different contexts, different conditions, different products we're looking for. So I think this is awesome for the old days. It's like, yeah, set these campaigns up, do these things. But my mission in life is that this is not awesome anymore, because our technology can be way better than that. And if it is better than that, then 13x becomes 50x and 100x. And I'm very serious about those numbers.
I love it. I never knew this too. I just did a search while you were talking. It was like Duolingo messaging. You can see Hi, I miss you. Do you want to practice Spanish today?
Like, yeah.
There's a lot of
Duolingo is super creative with it. And it's really funny because some people love it and some people hate it. Some people find it passive aggressive or pretentious or annoying, or it's just the reality is that we're all different. Yeah. Poshmark is another great one. It's a commerce app, but they send weird notifications like, I love you. Like, or you're an amazing person today. And then people will write on Twitter about like, Poshmark is the wind beneath my wings, you know, and this crazy stuff because it's actually crazy. It's like, yeah. You know, like this application is saying something encouraging to me. Like, that's cool.
You said it. Why is Duolingo messaging me like a passive aggressive boy who's salty that I haven't given him attention? Chill, baby. I'm busy.
Exactly. It's hilarious. I capture these are like my,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, like when we want to set up trigger campaigns, do we need to do anything in our app, or is AMP going to just be so intelligent that it's going to take care of all that for us?
Yeah. So there's an important point here, which is, so it really, like, it depends on what your stack is in terms of your capabilities. It depends even on when we talked about that click stream.
Yeah.
You know, the click stream is there in the sense that for the app to operate, everything is sort of being logged, and that's what allows this the thing to speak to itself. But not all of it is necessarily going into your CDP or your data lake or wherever your data is stored. Not every event might have been instrumented in that way that's analytically accessible to you. So that's one limitation, is, you know, depending on how that's set up. And we have lots of thoughts and commentary on how to best to do that, et cetera. But the second piece, though, is that, all right, let's say we've got all the events that we might want to use for triggers. You don't need to actually, with AMP, you don't need to explicitly manually set them, because we will learn the patterns and then adjust the messages just based on the AI. However, you can actually think about it from the perspective of creating content. You can create content that's specific to that trigger. And the AI, especially at a scale for a smaller app, can't learn how to generate text that's specific to an event, but it's too long of a learning process. So what you as a human needs to be able to do is create content that's specific to that trigger. So that wish list we were talking about, or, you know, in a running app, you might want to encourage people to, or a key moment might be that they connect it to their social so that they can actually boast and crow and get excited within their community about running. That can be a trigger, right? So you want to create content that's specific to that and be like, yeah, spread the word, the run was awesome, or, you know, or like, great job cleaning up your wish list. So you need to write those messages so that those are linked, so that then we know that that trigger is that. And so AMP, we've tried to make that part really easy. So we save you time. You're not setting up all those manual journeys. And instead, we're helping you focus more on generating really exciting, high quality content and doing the minimal work necessary to link that so that the AI understands the context of that message.
I love it. All right. I'm going to say hi to a few people that should have done it earlier. What's up, Nurex? Good to see you. We got Louise here. And then we got Marwan. Kevin's here as well. Another Kevin. And then we've got Five Live. Happy Friday, fam. Adrian's here. He's got a mental health app. I had a question here. And then Five Live, if you're in the comments, you put a little nice little trick here as well. Let's see. There's somebody had an app idea. All right. Nurek says, Steve, happy to see you on live stream again. Hopefully you enjoyed your holidays. How is AI app perspective on keywords and in-app purchases? So from a keywords perspective, if we're building an AI app, if you got a massive budget for marketing and paid user acquisition, go ahead and call it whatever you want. But Nurex, I like to, you know, I did a video about this, but from an ASO perspective, if you're on a limited budget, build for the outcome. So a lot of AI stuff, it's like essay writer, paragraph writer, these all have good traffic. The big guys aren't going to care about these keywords because they're not as high volume, but they're very niche. And so I always start in the niche first if I don't have a big budget. And then I move on to, because I can always start off and compete with the big guys after I built sort of an audience in a particular niche. That's how I would frame it. Paul, you want to add on to this?
No, I think that's great. I don't think I necessarily understood the question so well. So I think your answer made it clear for me. Yeah.
Paul, can you help me establish a sales company in Singapore?
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah.
He's just joking. Five Live, by the way.
No, I know.
No, I meant for the audience who's not watching. Some people just listen to this. But hey, Paul, Steve, very interesting. So Kevin's got an idea or question. I'm looking into this in the future for functional health, which we're going to get to. What's AMP's pricing?
Yeah. So we generally price on two tiers, which is just like the per user price. And usually it's sort of a cent or basis point per user per month. We're still early stage. So we've got apps using us all around the world. And there's a lot of varieties in terms of markets. The cost, the value per user in Indonesia is very different than it is in the US, for example. So we're still, so reach out if you're an app. Listen, we care about you. We're excited about you. We're small enough to care about absolutely everyone. So send a note on our website or connect with me on LinkedIn, and we will absolutely talk to you and understand whether we can add value and ROI, and then the pricing will fall out of that. So don't let that be a deterrent to finding out.
Make sure you let Paul know you hit her on this, and he's going to give you special treatment.
That's right. Exactly.
All right, Paul. Let's speaking of Kevin, let's get into this app, and we will get into the app audit side of the show. We'd like to start it off with some dad jokes. All right, Paul. Late in your end, so I'm going to hype you up. You want to go first? You're the guest. You want to go first? Or you want to go second?
I feel like as a guest, I should let the host set the tone.
All right. I will set the tone here. Paul, since we've been talking about Duolingo, what is the difference between dad jokes and the Spanish language?
Oh, no.
I'll tell you, Paul. With the Spanish language, you roll your R's. With dad jokes, you roll your I's. There you go.
I like it. Well, okay, that's good enough to warrant a gift. What kind of plant do you give a dad for that kind of a joke?
What?
A face palm.
I like that. That's my go-to emoji, by the way. Put Paul if you thought Paul's, or put P if you thought Paul's joke was better. Put S if you thought my joke was better. And then we'll play for some coffee. How about that, Paul?
Or lunch. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll make it fun. Okay, so let's get into Kevin's app right here. He's got an app called Functional Health. It's in the app stores already. I've got it loaded up on my phone. Let me pull up the app store listing. Kevin, where was it again? Get the app, download the app. All right, cool. Paul, any first impressions on the app? Screenshots, app store presence, everything else?
I'm trying to, let me blow my screen up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up too. Here, there you go.
Yeah, that's much better. So functional health. I mean, I'm all about the concept. So I love when apps can make this actually accessible to people. Yeah.
I'll go, Paul. You're a guest. So this is my point. I'll be a little bit mean. Kevin, I have no idea what the app does. Like, honestly, is it workout programs? What the hell does it do? I think, in my opinion, Paul, and I love your thoughts on this. This is just one man's opinion. I think when you're trying to be everything to everyone, you're nothing to, what's the saying? You're nothing to everyone. But I think it's just, I don't get what the app does. And I know you have healthy habits here. And so with an app that is, if it's going to be like a better me in essence, where I just looked at their app, but then you're going to have to do a lot of like education and telling people what the app does. And right now, Kevin, I'm just going to assume you don't have a big budget for marketing. Like then you need to, that's why I say start in the niche. If you don't have a big budget for marketing, if you did not raise funding for your app and you're trying to bootstrap the heck out of this, start in the niche, because right now, I have no idea what this app does. And I have data points. We work with the client where it was a niche fitness app. He tried to go broad and it completely tanked the downloads. It completely tanked a lot of stuff. And I was like, dude, and I told him, I don't think you should do this. Stay in the niche. You've got a great app. It's growing. Stay within this realm. But he wanted to go bigger. And then it did not work by going bigger and broad. It doesn't work all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, I have a sort of a question for you, Steve, which is, how much do you think when you are at that stage and you're like, how much can you solve that problem in the screenshots of the App Store anyway? If you're really niche and you're really getting started and you don't have a big budget, don't you kind of have to drive some other kind of organic process, some other kind of thing versus the screenshots? I just wonder, because I mean, as someone who's built apps before and invested in apps before, I always found it a little bit it's just like confusing to get the feedback that I should be specific in these screenshots, when I always imagined that the process of building that app was a way of learning. You're kind of trying something and then learning where there's a response, et cetera. And so that often happens offline. When we were building PaySense as a loan app, a credit app in India, we were just hitting the ground, like in Mumbai and at other cities. We would be going to these office centers and kind of like speaking to people to get them to download the app. And then once you kind of like begin to drive some acquisition, but I wonder, can you really find people just through app? Maybe you can. I just don't know enough about App Store optimization.
Absolutely. You know, like, so here we'll show you this. This is my favorite tool to use. You know, I do know, having worked with a bunch of fitness apps, like certain keywords have decent traffic and lower competition. And I won't say any here, but like, you know, for functional health, like I don't get even, so the title, to answer your question, the title is the most useful from an ASO standpoint, right?
Yeah.
And then the subtitle is the second, and he has a lot of generic terms like daily habits.
Yes, I agree.
Hard, and then wellness and well-being programs going to be super hard to rank for. So this is what I mean. Like, could you put a 30-day challenge, push-up challenge? What I do know, Paul, is like these type of niche terms have higher conversions because they're so right. You know exactly what they're looking for. So if I'm looking for a push-up challenge app, and you tell me that you're a push-up challenge app, then I'm like, perfect. You know, I think the mistake that I see people make, and it's twofold. If you raise money and you've got money for marketing, go ahead, do what Kevin's doing right now. If you did not, though, and you're trying to bootstrap the heck out of this and you have no money for any of this stuff, then it's important to start more in the niche, like, you know, focus on that and then grow. That's just my opinion. Yeah. But then you get the revenues, right? Like now you have cash flow.
But I would say, as someone who's raised a lot of money in my day and invested a lot, I would say, I would extend what you're saying is, if you raise money, don't do this. If it's not going to be successful, don't, please don't. Even just, doesn't matter if you have that money, don't, in today's world, don't throw it away. But I mean, like your specific stuff, like functional health, daily habit, it doesn't roll off the tongue. It's not snappy. I don't know if you need to convey what it actually does so thoroughly in the title itself. But if you do, like, then it has to convey something very, specific in order to fit into that small amount of space. But I agree that, like, from the language there, and then wellness and well-being programs, it's trying to do a lot, and it's not coming off clear what it's about.
Yeah, and the text is too small, Kevin. You should probably try to have like what this app does right in the title, right? Because right now I can't even read any of this text. It's very small. So I would try to, in the screenshots, the text in the screenshot. So we did this A/B test, Paul, where it was like calm stress and anxiety, right? And then we said, hey, this is the app that helps you, you know, this is the, I'm trying to think of a better analogy without giving away the client, but this is the app for push-ups, right? So like it's, one was like lose weight and feel better. And then the other one was like the lose weight and feel better with push-up challenges. And then the push-up challenges saw a 30% increase in downloads because we ranked well for push-up challenge. And it sort of regurgitates what you're looking for, this first screenshot. So that first screenshot is critical to explain what the app does.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the app does right now.
Yeah.
We don't have time. Like you said, we're busy. All right, let's get into the app, Kevin. Wait, so when you said, even if you raise money, don't be everything to everyone, is that what you're trying to say?
I'm saying, even if you raise money, don't throw it away on marketing.
Okay, I gotcha. Trying to live a better life and live well. See, it's like, it's too generic. I don't know how, okay, they're functional fitness or cross training. Great, I love cross training. I do everything. You know, I do the boxing workouts, I do yoga, I run, I bike, I do weights, I try to do it all. And so if that's the case, Kevin, then lead with that. Like, I had no idea that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. I find that imagery a little bit, I always thought functional was more kind of like your body weight and other things like that. So it was sort of like low gear. But yeah. In the first two images, I see one with like one, it's, you could sort of see, you could just do it in your living room, and right. One has weights in it. And I think that's a little confusing to me, but also, the language is also kind of open-ended, which we notice a lot with messaging is not great. Asking a lot of open questions. Do you want to do this or you want to do this and this? You know, it's
right.
Just have an opinion and push that opinion forward, and people either respond to it or not. But like asking, you know, are you interested in this? Maybe thinking about getting started.
Right.
You better want them to get started. So like just put it more clearly. Just like get started today, right?
One thing I'll also say, a lot of fitness apps tend to have longer onboardings. They do work better. I have data that supports that. They do work better than shorter ones because, yes, less people will go through the entire onboarding, but the people that do make it through the entire onboarding will actually convert better. Mm-hmm. Secondly, Kevin, you did not ask me anything about me. So you have no data on me. You were just talking all about you. What we talked to the Headway PM and they said, and I fully believe this because we have seen data, when you get users to engage and be like, what are you here for? I'm going to do a video for me because I think their flow is phenomenal. But get users to engage first. It does increase the conversions. And secondly, it makes the user feel like you're customizing the app. So you get to say, what are you here for? What are you currently? How active you are? How old are you? Blah, blah, blah. And yes, you're going to get drop off, but it does work.
Mm.
The second thing I'll say is we have data. We had one client. I was like, I had this hypothesis, Paul, where I was like, log in, continue with better than any other thing, right? Because then log in feels like a chore, psychologically speaking. Sign in feels like a chore. Sign up feels like a chore. Whereas I continue, I'm like, no problem. Like I'm already on the way, right? Like I'm already moving. So one of our clients changed, all they did was change the words from sign in with Google and Apple to continue with Google and Apple and saw 9% in conversions. So I know Kevin said, sign in.
Yeah. One of the big problems with saying log in is that if people think that they had to already have an account, we've seen that a lot, is that then they'd like back out because they're like, oh, how can I log in? I haven't created an account. So where do I go create an account? Or I don't want to create an account right now. So yeah, something like continue just lets you just be like, oh, okay, I can keep going. But I'm gonna challenge you just a little bit on that.
Please.
The point you made there, Steve, because, in data, as we call that, a lot of causal language, where you sort of said getting them to engage or getting them to answer questions because then they convert higher at the end. And I think that you see that pattern. You'll absolutely see the pattern. It's a valid pattern. It's not necessarily causal in the sense that the flow is what caused them. What it is doing is potentially it's just filtering. So that person may have already had high intention. So I think the point still stands. I think the key thing is just make that onboarding experience somehow useful to them. Like help them learn about themselves as you learn about them.
Yeah.
Because it can't just be any amount of arbitrary work will actually increase their engagement. It's got to be that like that work is somehow useful. And then if you ask them those questions, you better have a way of using it.
Yeah.
Because exactly otherwise, right.
Yeah. So what I would say, Kevin, it kind of froze on the sign up. And I know you've left the messaging in here in the comments, but what I've been promoting since 2019, and we have data that supports this, that longer paywalls do perform better than shorter ones because they perform better on the web anyways. I would X out this features table. I know I said it to do it. If you're going to go long, X this out, because my hypothesis, Paul, is if I see a free version, I'm just going to be like, this is probably good enough. And so people have reported back that sometimes the longer paywalls don't perform as well as the shorter ones. And I'm like, I think it's because maybe you're just highlighting too many free features. And especially if you're leading with this, it's like, okay, cool. This is good enough. I'm just going to hit the X that there's a free version. So like lead with some of the benefits. Always talk about them, what they're going to get out of the app versus this. And then last thing, Kevin, you know, I think I would try to get into the yearly plan as much as possible because the monthly has the worst LTV. Oh, this looks like $299 build. I don't like that. What do you think, Paul? You might not be able to see the text, but it says 7-day trial, then $299 monthly build annually.
Yeah, that is confusing.
Yeah, it feels like a bait and switch. We have also seen, last thing on this, like rounded numbers tend to perform better than these weird odd numbers, like $29.99, $24.99, not $28.99 in there too. And then Paul, you know, I like this. One thing that Jim said in the presentation was, like, with fitness apps, he's the number one, I think what I had put, the number one indicator of churn, or I forget if he said churn or retention, but I don't know if you remember, but he said for fitness apps, it's not, everybody thinks, and I assume this too, because we saw one client where he's like, if you get people to work out, they'll stay in the app. And then Jim said, it's actually not a workout, finishing a workout. It's actually sharing within a fitness app that actually helps people stay within the app. I love that insight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's true. Like me, I was like, oh, yes. Like I use Peloton all the time. And sometimes I will share my workouts, or I'll just share it with friends. And then yes, you know, like I'm more likely, you know, I already love the app, but anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a two-step. It's what it's doing is creating value in two aspects. You did the workout, and now you also benefited from sharing and talking about the, and it's like, so it's just expanding the mind space that you're in. That's so key, is to expand the context in which you're being remembered as an app and thought of as an app. Otherwise, you do one exercise and you're like, all right, well, that was fun, but you know, that's it. That's all it was.
Yeah. All right. Somebody had a question. If you guys do want us to audit your app in a future live stream, just go to appmasters.com/audit, appmasters.com/audit. That's the answer. Their questions. And then I've got a question from Five Live that says, Paul, can you speak about the Apple privacy rules and how your service overcomes it?
Yeah, I think privacy changes are like super important for people to be thinking about. The ATT changes with Apple, I think cookieless that, you know, Google's trying to push towards. But it also just really speaks to the over-reliance that we've developed in the last, you know, however many years on performance marketing and advertising outside of the context of our app. That's where it really matters, because that's where you can't track that person now across different properties. You can't, you know, know that what they're doing in the app and then follow them and make sure that they're get that particular person getting an advertisement on a social platform. But the thing is like your application is first party data. It's, you have that user ID, you have that user, and they've given you certain permission, assuming that they have, and you have the opportunity to influence that decision, to reach out to them through the channels that are, you know, that often they're called own channels. So you potentially have their email address, you potentially have their SMS, you can, or a phone number, maybe they've, you know, connected their WhatsApp or something like that. They put the app on their phone. And so you have the surface space of the phone in the form of notifications. And Apple's privacy rules can't affect any of those things. You don't have to, there's not something magical about a message on a Facebook wall. It's just that, you know what? Facebook is much better at surfacing your ad than you are in your own channel, because you're using a CRM platform that's crappy, that's asking you to set up all these rules that are super arbitrary and generic. And so, yeah, of course, go spend the money because it's more effective messaging. But if you could do that effective messaging on your own first party data and in your own channel and surface area, man, how awesome would that be, right? And so that's how we overcome those rules. As we say, you know what? Doesn't Apple's decisions are Apple's decisions. We shouldn't anyway necessarily need to be speaking to a person everywhere on the web, especially once they've downloaded the app.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's Paul. For more important news, we have, the votes are in. Eric gave me the win. Functional Kevin. See, I was too mean to him. And it's like, he's like, and then Nurex. And we got Five Lives. I won that round, Paul. You ready for round two?
Yes.
Whoops. All right. What you got?
All right. So speaking of learning, two guys walk into a bar.
Okay.
Third guy walks under it.
All right. Paul, the only thing flat earthers have to fear is sphere itself. I butchered it. It's fear itself. There you go. Round. Okay. I've just had a hard time saying it. All right. Let's get into John's app right here real quick, and then we'll try to go really fast on this one. So he's got a cute wallpapers app. I love it. It's pretty cool. We've seen like wallpaper apps do pretty well. Exclusive content. Again, John, like what I talked about before, like lead with the main keyword. If you're going to call your app cute wallpapers, like put big and bold cute wallpapers. Really go in on it. And here's what I mean too, Paul, when I'm talking about, so I like using AppRadar in terms of ASO. I tend to find that they have the best difficulty scores. And when you're starting the niche, you know, go in the difficulty scores. Here's what I want to pull up, just knowing what I know. I'm giving away too much content for free, Paul. Look,
I know. I'm saying your audit process is super valuable.
So cute wallpapers has pretty decent traffic, pretty low competition. Anything around 40-ish is and lower are pretty, it's pretty low. So you can even call it cute anime wallpapers, John, and go after those particular keywords. Because you can see if you just try to go after wallpapers or even like 4K wallpapers or wallpapers 4K, that will probably have more difficulty in there too. And one of the things I like to do from just an ASO standpoint, Paul, is I like to just go in the app stores and just, whoops, wrong one, kind of figure out like what's auto-suggested wallpapers. And then kind of figure out what's, that helps me kind of be like, okay, what is interesting right here? So do some keyword research. But this is what I mean. Like try to find, what we found from our data is if you've got, you want to aim for keywords around 30, that'll help you get to that initial 100 organic free downloads if and only if you are in the number one position. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about staying in the niche there.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Like, sure. How would you evaluate that? So, okay, so wallpapers is what it is. Cute is the adjective. It's like the value proposition. Right. How would you, like you did the search and you search for wallpapers, what they suggest, but how would you know it would be cute and not, you know, sexy or fun or beautiful or
One of my favorite things to do is this tool. It's just AppFollow. It's not working right now, but this is my favorite way of getting keyword
preppy
research is just putting wallpapers as an example. So I'll start with the generic term and then I'll look for the app that tends to stick out, because my assumption is they don't belong, right? These apps have, this one has 100,000. This one has close to 40,000, 30,000, 5,000. So now I'm like, okay, well, this one, you saw that it was ranking number one for cute as well. So this one only has 2,000. I'm like, why is this app there? And my assumption is they're probably doing something right with an ASO. And so what I do is, and then I click this little eye icon. If it was working, it goes down a little bit. So sorry, AppFollow, I don't, you know, it's a great tool, but it goes down. But when you click this eye icon, that's when you can do keyword research. And they'll come up with a list of about 100 keywords. And then you can then put that into, you can use AppFollow as well, but you can then put it to AppRadar and then get the data through that.
See, and I think it's a good example. It's like, I actually look at my phone a lot. So I kind of, in a weird way, care about my wallpaper in a way that I never would have thought I would. I am an aesthetic person. I like things to look nice, right? But I got to say that like cute generally is not something that would engage me. And so maybe great, you're being specific, but if you're not, like the aesthetic one, I find aesthetic is a little bit of an awkward term. It's a weird spelling, right? It's not that accessible to a lot of people, but actually it's just to add, I think what you're showing is amazing. Like these tools are really cool. But I would also say as soon as you start getting downloads, you can be sending notifications to all of those users and you can be testing those terms in those and which ones get people further in, which ones hold people around, which ones, and then you can use that knowledge on the users who have actually downloaded the app to also influence how you do your ASO and how you title your app and things like that. These terms like, should it be cute? Should it be energizing? That would be something I'd like, right? Like energizing wallpapers or
Okay.
I think there's so many options. Yeah. You can test them on your own users.
I like it. John, what I would say is it's too soon. This is the first screen that I see, Paul. It's better to get users to, we have a case study, John, so keep following the channel. But anyways, one app was doing this. He added 3 onboarding screens that talked about the benefits of the app and then hit him with the paywall. He saw a 234% increase in sales and conversions. And so, actually, I should say conversions, not sales. But
for another app, we saw a 30% increase. That was a lot bigger because this app was smaller. But anyways, that's what I would do. Just because right now, like if I want cute wallpapers, I want to know how many wallpapers. I want to see the style. And I want.
Yeah, do I even agree that it's cute?
Right. Point for you there. So what we've also seen with these type of apps is weekly performs pretty well. So don't sleep on weekly. And I know you don't have a trial on the weekly, which is fine, but don't sleep on weekly because you can, these type of entertainment apps, sometimes they're just in for a little bit and they want to get out. And especially if you allow me to download these wallpapers, they just want to come in for a cheap little offer, but they might forget. So the LTV on the weekly and the annual are going to be the highest, where the LTV on the monthly is going to be the lowest. So if anything, yeah, I would jack up the monthly to be like $9 a month to make annual look so much better.
You're so right about sowing some value first, giving a sample something. And I know this is another part of that like causality thing. It's like I hear a lot of people say, you know, push the paywall right at the top because then you reduce your drop. Like basically it thins people out. It shows high intent.
Right.
But that's fine. So some people are so intent on using this, they're going to do that. But there's so many people who just need to see something and you're losing those people. And I think if the people with high intents, they'll continue on and you'll get them anyway. So you didn't actually learn by putting the paywall up that you would only get them if you put the paywall up. So that's an analytical thing. One other thing, I have a question for you, Steve, which is, what do you think about like this move towards hybrid?
What do you mean?
So for example, like giving a lower price subscription, the reason you do subscriptions is you get the value up front, right?
And
but let's say having a lower subscription or having a good opportunity on the weekly or monthly. And what about transacting in terms of like offering some premium features or some screens or something like that in the app where there's an opportunity for you to upsell people and capture more value into it rather than just trying to capture all the value you can get right at the paywall, right at the subscription price?
Yeah, I love it. I think, you know, I've been thinking about diversifying the monetization. And I saw Better Me do this actually. So here, I'll just pull it up. I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but you know, they obviously have a way for me to subscribe. And but when I go to challenges, I can buy these things. Is this what you mean? Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And I think this is brilliant. Like I've seen, cause I have the data.
Yeah.
One of our clients, it's a game though, but so it's like sort of adopting from games, but essentially, you know, when I looked at his numbers, his sales, he was actually making most of his money from subscriptions, but it was a pretty decent number just coming from like people buying tokens and random other things. And so
I thought
Better Me was doing a great job of their monetization.
Yeah.
And then what I would say, John, is look, I hit a premium paywall and then you hit me with an ad. I'm like, bro, you probably don't want to do that. So like, yeah, you want to hit, and here's what I've seen work really well too. So back to what we said in the beginning, Paul, with the cart abandonment. Look, I hit the paywall I wanted, the wallpaper I wanted. I also hit download and then I hit pro. It'd be good to see that wallpaper here. It'll also be good for me to get a discount if I said no to that because I'm showing more intent. You tell me if I'm wrong on this, Paul, but that's how I've seen work. And I'm borrowing this from Headway where they do just that. So I come here, I hit yes, I want this. I then hit your paywall. I then say no to your paywall. Then you hit me with an offer to say 50% or 35% off the annual. And that does pretty well.
Discounts are good for sure. But I think a lot of times they're not the core problem. The core problem is whether you really trust the underlying value, whether you're really bought into it, et cetera. And anytime you can reaffirm and re-push and re-expose that person to that core value, I think you're winning every time. I saw this really amazing thing with this commerce app that was specifically a series of messages about sneakers and running shoes and things like that. And they were really heavily relying on discounts. And what we saw on their notifications was when we started to actually generate messages that spoke to other benefits and value propositions, what was really interesting was that the discount often drove a high click rate, but not a very high conversion rate. And here's the thing, here's the way I map that and make sense of that is that as a person in life,
I'm going through, I've got a lot of things that I would want to buy. And one of them is my screen and my, you know, something on my home screen on my app or my phone. Another is a pair of shoes, right? And so if I want some shoes and I know it, but I also want other things, and you get me and you tell me you're going to, the shoes are $100 and you're going to give me a discount. Great. $10 off. So I'm like, oh yeah, I should take advantage of this because it's $10 off. And I click through. But what are the thoughts I have on that payment checkout? The thoughts I have are, man, $90 is still a lot. $10 mm-hmm. off. You know what? If I don't spend that right now, that's $100 off because I didn't spend, right? So that's a better discount, is not buying it. And I could spend that $90 elsewhere. And yeah, no, I'm not going to do it now, right? But the thing is why are you buying those shoes? Like for me, you're buying the running shoes because that's going to help you go run. And what is running going to do your life? And this year, your life's going to change because you're going to start running. And it's going to be amazing because you're going to feel better and you're going to look better and your life's going to change, right? All of a sudden, $100 is like, hell yeah, I'm going to spend $100 to make my life better because the shoes are going to make my life better, right? So I think it's just that example of like, yeah, the discount helps you in a very short-term way of just like saving some money, and that'll motivate some people. And I definitely think you should use it. But if you can also find a way to surface the real value of your product, then a lot of times that is more powerful than the discount. And again, people just really underuse their messaging. Notifications can be used to do this kind of thing. Reaffirm the value proposition. Reaffirm the value proposition.
I love it. You know, I thought of like, you know, because I'm simple, Paul. I'm not AI machine learning type of stuff. But I thought of messaging as like a email flow, right? Like if you sign up for some of these course creators, I'm one of them, so I'm not talking ish about them. But if you sign up for their email flow, their funnel, you know, they have this sequence where it's like benefit, 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 sale. Okay, you know, and then offer, yeah. Limited time yeah. offer. And then it's kind of like talking yeah. about what you just said, rather than hitting yeah. them with the discount right away, because they know that doesn't work, build that trust, show the benefits, 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 and then hit them with the limited time yeah, offer, right. sale,
absolutely.
All that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
And we actually seen like bonuses work. This is more in the digital course realm, but bonuses work better than discounts. So it's not like you're discounting products, but like, hey, these things are going away. So it's like loss aversion. All these yes. great things that are coming, you got to buy within the next 48 hours. Otherwise, you're going to lose these things. Hey, Paul, speaking about discounts, look, I'm on Better Me. It says, Steve, you've been selected. Trainer Ava sent you a secret offer. What do you think is going to happen? Let's stop this.
And you got one and then another one there.
I don't see anything. Yeah. Where is it? Okay. I didn't see anything.
They may Maybe not have just, their deep. They probably don't have their deep. There's the special gift. You think that's what they're referring to?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. I saw this.
They don't have their
too.
Deep links. I think that this is a common problem, is not to have the deep links connected in a way that allows you to make sure that if you offer something, it's going to take you right to that offer.
Yeah, it might be that. Okay, well, I like it. Well, anything else that we want to cover, Paul, before we say goodbye?
I'm good. Yeah, I don't know if there's any.
Cool. Well, check out. There,
but no, this is awesome. I really enjoyed it, Steve. And anyway, your content is always awesome.
I appreciate that, Paul. Well, check out Amped. It's AAMPE.com, or just click on the YouTube description or your favorite podcast app, and you'll go directly to the website as well. And you let Paul know that you heard it on this podcast. He's going to give you, treat you special. How about that? I'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
Paul, if the audience wants to connect with you in any other way, do you want to send them anywhere else?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. My email is paul@amp.com. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, Paul's LinkedIn is linked up into the YouTube and podcast stuff. So you can go check him out there as well. All right. Next week, let me pull it up real quick. I totally forgot who's coming on. Oh, we got Brandon. He's got a birthday app, and we're going to talk all about how do you really build his app has higher retention than TikTok. And he's going to talk all about all the features that you need to have a high retaining app. That's going to really move the needle in terms of everything else. And Paul, you know, I'm always revenue first, but now I'm starting to back off on that and be more like, okay, how do I build a long-term strategy? Because revenue first is a very good short-term strategy, but let's think about a long-term strategy too. So I'm excited
Love
about
it.
That. All right. And last news, Paul, you're going to have to go to sleep sad, but I did win the dad joke. Sorry. I do this every week.
I think there's some host bias here or something.
I do lose. Okay, Luis said, thanks. Good. See you guys next week. Have an amazing weekend. Luis, you too. Paul, thank you so much. You guys, thanks for watching. I'll see you next Friday. Bye.
Tired of overpaying for app store optimization? Get unlimited ASO and app marketing support to increase your keyword rankings, downloads, and more importantly, your revenue. Learn more at asomasters.com.
Thanks for listening to the App Masters podcast. For show notes and amazing app marketing content, check out appmasters.co.